The day remained fine, bright, warm, but not oppressively hot. They made their way north a mile across green land and fields of crops, now sadly trampled, either by the defending forces or by the raiders. They had passed a burned-out vill maybe a mile to the east of them. Ryan kept the Hummer purring along slowly, pacing his troops, winged out maybe 20 yards to secure their own hanging right flank. The valley troops had moved out maybe 300 yards in advance of the city contingent. As Ryan anticipated, nobody said anything to them about their tardiness. Don Hector was still in his manic phase, no doubt strutting and blustering for Don Tenorio's benefit and his own, back on the hill by his RV. His sub-commanders, with his actual army, were too busy snarling and screaming themselves hoarse, urging on their troops, whose pace was noticeably slacking.
Surprised he doesn't just give his Sekhmet whips to drive the draftees into battle.
No doubt he'll think of it next time.
Notice our boys are slowing to keep pace with him, without my having to say so.
Wearing down. Only thing runs a man's battery down faster than marching toward a fight is actually being in it.
You got that right.
They had three MG WAGs now, the fourth having stayed back with the mobile command headquarters, along with about 30 city fighters, with half a dozen of Tenorio's small corps of elite Jaguar Knights among them. They were serving as bodyguards for the Alcalde, and likewise a mobile reserve, that being something else Don Hector didn't believe in. Between them, Tenorio and the canny doc surmised that Hector might have left as much as half of his armed strength back at his palace on Chapultepec and among his subject vills, to keep the peons from getting notions about playing while the big cat was away. But everything he brought to the dance, he was throwing straight away at the invaders. Ryan had two machine gun wags up at the front, right now winged out 20 yards each, as far as he dared given the Chichimec's propensity to lurk under cover and swarm. His scooter scouts circulated in front and to the flanks in hopes of spotting any infiltrators and ambushers, but staying close by so they wouldn't get wolf-packed without hope of rescue as Claudia had. When the city fighters deployed into a rifle line, the machine gun wags would this time deploy properly, to anchor either end and crossfires to the front. That was the theory anyway. Whether the Chichimecs would give them time to deploy was a whole other smoke. The third MG truck brought up the rear. When the hammer came down, it would be Ryan's reserve, which he could send to where its firepower was most urgently needed. Also at the column's rear, just in front of the machine gun truck, were the two multiple rocket launcher wags, which could shoot over the heads of the foot soldiers. All told, while he would naturally have preferred to have the hard-forged and tough-tempered chillers from trader days with him, Ryan was as well set up as he could hope to be in terms of his own forces. The kicker was that he knew nothing at all about the enemy, except there were thousands of them, fanatical cold hearts every one, that he didn't know where they were, other than out there somewhere, and that they possessed some kind of fearsome muti powers. Off to the right, maybe 60 feet, a metal post jutted at a crazy angle from the grass. It might have been a fence post or a signpost in pre-dark times, he couldn't know. A meadowlark was perched on it, yellow breast with a deep black V-shaped collar glinting in the sun. It sang its distinctive trilling song as if nothing could go wrong in the world. As Ryan watched him, he took off and flew away south as if a devil were on his tail. From up ahead to the left came faint cries and the distinctive thump of shots.
Here it comes!
Look!
A black shape in the sky appeared to the northwest. A big shape, wings spread impossibly wide against the bright clouds piled high above the horizon. It was bearing down on the Valley Force. Something in the way it moved told Ryan it was a beast, a muti horror, not some kind of sky wag. Coming to chill them. They heard a distinctive, slow, deep rapping, joined instantly by another voice, and another. The flying muti's wings suddenly went straight up, and it dropped out of Ryan's sight to the ground, well in advance of the valley ranks.
Phew! Et toi!
What in the name of blazing nuke death was that?
Ma deuce. Whatever the muti was, it's cat food now. Flying fuckers don't stand a chance this day.
No matter how dubious Ryan was of the bulk of Don Hector's forces, his machine gunners had seen a pack of hard fighting. They'd be steady as norms could be at the work they had to do. What remained to be seen was if that would be enough against what Howling Wolf and the Holy Chout could throw at them.
Wouldn't mind having a few myself.
That had been Don Tenorio's own point of stinginess. The limited number of the big 50-cal MGs he had access to, he'd chosen to leave to guard the city, mostly on his handful of patrol boats, including the Paloma Blanca. While he was serious as a sucking chest wound about concluding the war with this day's fight, if at all possible, he still chose to hedge his bet. It should prove no big disadvantage. The Chichimecs had never shown sign of having war wags, and if they used powered wags at all for transport, they never let them slip into sight of enemies.
Hey, everybody!
The column had stopped at sight of the giant flying mutie. At his signal, the men began to spread out into a rough line. Ryan wasn't sure what kind of command structure he had under him, but the city fighters seemed to handle simple tasks and maneuvers well enough for the work at hand, so it was one more thing not to stuff his head with. He got on the squawk box to 5X. Miraculously, it worked. He wasn't quite up to getting what he needed to across purely by speech, but he let the Jaguar Knight know he needed a palaver now, and here he came, bent low over the handlebars of his dirt bike, grinning.
Make sure everybody watches the sky. Flyers! Bad!
See? No sheet.
5X threw up a wave of dirt that thunked against the door of the Hummer as he slewed his ride around and rode away.
You too, Jack. You might have more flying friends come along.
On it.
The battle noise from Hector's troops was coming fast and loud now. Apparently, the flying mutie's appearance had coincided with contact with serious Chichimec forces. While he was still able to, Ryan took a swallow of water, recapped his bottle, and slung it back to his belt. He accelerated the wag and drove to a position just east beyond the end of the line that was forming. He waved to the city fighters to keep moving. They did, and he didn't have to tell them to be cautious. A gentle swell of ground hid the developing battle from their sight. Ryan moved out deliberately in advance of what had become a skirmish line.
Jack, sing out the second you see anything. I want to put his hole down.
Now!
Carrying his stire, Ryan got out and climbed onto the hood. His Simmons hung by its lanyard around his neck. He raised it and surveyed the ground ahead. The land fell away to a broad basin, apparently flat. It was veined with low lava flows and greened over rills that may have been drifts of ash long condensed into soil and rock by rain and sun, transversely cut by at least one shallow stream. Dead ground heaven, in other words, the kind where, with no obvious cover at all, you could hide an army. Sure enough, the Chichimecs had.
Called it right again, Ryan.
Don Hector pissed away most of the advantages blaster power gave him and walked his men right into the bastards. But what's this?
Ryan was already looking not off to the left, where battle was marked largely by writhing, wrestling bodies where the raiders had already come to grips with the front ranks of Hector's men, but directly in the path of his own force.
Chichimecs! Swarming like maggots on a two-day dead stiff. At least 1,000 of them. More! Damn good thing we hung back. They'd be on us right now like stink on a sec man.
Right.
There was something wrong here. If they'd kept up with Hector's men, that pullulating mass of human and mutie flesh would have crushed them like a bug for all their machine guns and rockets. But pondering would have to wait. It was time to chill. The city fighters were flopping down along the hilltop, using its mass for cover. The scooter scouts were chivying the blaster wags into defilade positions, like the one Ryan had parked the Hummer in, with only their gun mount showing. 5X had his talkie to his mouth, feeding range and bearing data to the rocket wags. The mass of warriors on the horde's left had struck at what was supposed to be the city force. Hitting only air, the invaders then did the natural thing, swarming like locusts over the bare right flank of Hector's main force and wrapping around behind it. It was a classic outflanking maneuver, and was about to have the classic result. Hector's battle line would be rolled up, his men would break and flee in screaming panic, throwing away their blasters as the Chichimecs ran them down and butchered them like hogs. The battle would be over in a rout. But in turning to rat-pack Hector's lines, the Chichimecs bared their own flank to the late-arriving city forces. It was slaughter. In their eagerness to deliver the kill shot to Hector's army, and probably to tear away the first mouthful of blood-pumping man-flesh, the Mutie Norm mob had thrown away all thought of stealth. They were rushing forward in a wave, some actually trampling down and crushing those in front of them in a feeding frenzy. It was like shooting babies in a barrel.
Ryan!
What, Jack?
Chichimecs had appeared at the foot of the rise they were forded up behind and were charging up at them. Too many and too close to make throwing the bolt and hunting in the narrow vision field of his scope a very survivable pastime. He slung the rifle, jumped to the ground, started reaching into his backpack for frag grenades, pulling the pins and lobbing the bombs over the hill. He threw three in rapid succession, releasing the third as the first cracked off. A satisfying chorus of screams answered the blast. Even with onrushing danger to focus his mind, it took effort to concentrate against the storm of noise and muzzle blast erupting from Jack's M60. He could feel its hot breath on the back of his head and neck. The shock of the blasts buffeted him, made his hair fly, and seemed to be trying to tear off his right ear. JB was up on one knee now, firing his BAR in short savage bursts not 12 feet away. But even though it wasn't any quieter than the 60, Ryan could barely hear it. He wasn't in front of its muzzle. Ryan drew his Sig Sauer and his Panga. Shit! A human raider sprang over the hill and hacked at him with, of all things, a samurai sword. Ryan threw up his Panga to block. Evidently, the katana was a cheap reproduction. It failed to cut through the Panga's broad blade. With the muzzle of his Sig Sauer an inch from the Chichimec's breastbone, he shot the man twice. The man staggered back a couple of steps up the slope and sat down. He touched his chest, looked in horrified surprise at the blood on his fingers, then looked up at Ryan. Then he fell over. Another human wielding a spear came charging over the hilltop and promptly tripped over his dead comrade.
JB!
The armorer was nowhere to be seen. Ryan looked frantically around. Then from just over the hill, he heard the staccato snarl of the Browning automatic rifle. JB had hopped the crest to pour fire into the flank of the muties charging the city line.
What?
The sudden desperation charge by the Chichimecs had been driven off. By chance, the hill's north face offered virtually nothing by way of cover. In just the 20 yards or so of clear ground the invaders had to charge across, the city fighters had been able to shoot them all down, with help from JB. The armorer jumped back over the rise, holding his BAR in one hand and clamping his fedora to his head with the other.
Cannies are shooting back!
Ryan felt the thumps of bullets hitting the far side through the soles of his boots.
They pretty much had it, but a man could still get dead.
The huge mob of invaders in front of the scabby's position was milling in confusion. The missile wags had continued to punish the Chichimecs, the rockets drawing corkscrews of white smoke overhead before arcing down to burst among the enemy with bright red flashes and puffs of black smoke. JB and Jack added their firepower to the slaughter once more. Although it was still beset on two sides, Hector's force had solidified and was pouring fire into the Chichimecs. As many as a third of the valley men had been killed or routed off. Now the rest fought briskly. Ryan cinched up his shooting sling and began to seek out any invaders who looked as though they might be in positions of command. When he found them, he chilled them. Already, huge piles of dead and writhing, groaning wounded lay out in front of the scabby's hilltop. Ryan was amazed at the fanaticism, or sheer desperation, that kept them hanging on in the face of such a terrible bloodletting. It was as great a slaughter as any he had seen. As he watched, it became too much. The Chichimecs broke. First, a few clumps broke away and began running to the north. Then the whole mass seemed to fray and then disintegrate like a clod of earth caught in a torrent, streaming away from the terrible blasters that flayed them with relentless fire. Some of the scabby started to rise up as if to pursue.
Hey, what the hell are you stew bastards doing? Stop them!
Cooler-headed comrades dragged them back down. The headlong retreat might be another ruse, designed to draw out the defending forces in a pursuit that would destroy their own cohesion, scatter them so they could be bushwhacked in convenient bite-sized chunks.
Time to reload. Deathlands is continued on the next CD.
Graphic Audio is a movie in your mind. But Graphic Audio is playing in folks' minds all over North America. Right now, people like you are experiencing the power of Graphic Audio. For them, it's a totally new way to see an audiobook. Here's what they're saying. This was posted by Rayboy.
Man, is this one sweet. It's almost like having Jurassic Park in your head.
And here's something from Cerberus Man.
The Tigers of Heaven was very exciting. It was almost like listening to a movie. I'll be buying the other Outlanders series.
This is an email we got from Mark.
The sex scenes, they're depicted pretty effectively.
And here's an email from Chris Rutledge.
I have been a big fan of the Deathlands series for many years. I was delighted to find a multi-person cast and sound effects in the books. You do great work. Keep it up.
Got a comment you'd like to make about Graphic Audio? Got suggestions? Criticisms? Give us a call at 1-800-670-5220 or email us at support@cuttingaudio.com. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the container of this Graphic Audio book. We'd like to hear from you, wherever you are. Due to intense violence and sexual situations, Graphic Audio is rated for mature audiences.